We're going to have kind of a short course on Wednesday nights for the rest of this quarter. That's just for, what is this month? For July and August. And hopefully we'll be able to continue this, if not next quarter, into a different quarter, because there's no way that we'll be able to cover the entirety of the topic that I want us to cover this quarter just in these few weeks. But I wanted us to at least get a head start on looking at what's been entitled, just stories that were told by the master teacher. What stories do you know that were told by the master teacher in the Bible? The parables. And that's what we're talking about this quarter, is looking at the gospel accounts, looking at the parables, looking at what we can learn from them and make application in our lives. I would suspect that of all of the classes that you've been in, you've probably been in a couple classes that studied the parables. We won't have time to look at all of them, depending on who you read and who you listen to and how you count them. Most people put the count in the 30 somewhere, depending on which stories they included as parables and which they do not. But when you have over 30, there's no way that we're going to be able to look at all of them. For sure, we're not going to be able to look at all of them in July and August. But we're going to start looking at some of them, and hopefully, even though these are probably stories that we're more familiar with than any others. There may be some Old Testament stories like the creation or the flood or Abraham or some of your favorite Old Testament stories that you're pretty familiar with. We've probably read through the parables more than some of those stories even, and so I recognize that all of these are familiar passages. But nevertheless, I don't think that's a reason for us to neglect them and to not study them and to not spend time looking at them. As we're going to see on one of these slides tonight, there have been some who have estimated the teachings of Jesus that about a third of his teachings were in parables. Well, if you're looking at the teachings of Jesus and you're going to study the teachings of Jesus, you can't help but study the parables. And so tonight, I just want us to look at this in an introductory way for us to grab a hold of what parables are, how we should study them, how we should come and learn from them and make application in our lives. First couple things. The English word parable is simply a transliteration of a Greek word. And all the word transliteration means is they took the Greek letters and brought them over and made English letters out of them. So it's not really a translation. It's just taking a Greek word and making an English word that looks almost the same, except for one letter in there. But here's the Greek word, parabole, and here's how it's translated 50 different times. I think that's 50 different times in the New Testament you're going to find that Greek word. And obviously, 46, most of the time it's translated parable, but four other times it's translated either comparison or figure, or it's translated even one time as the word proverb. Now, why do you think that the word parable would be translated, why wouldn't it just be translated parable every time, especially if you're talking about a transliteration? Why would it be translated a comparison instead of parable? Because they are comparisons. Why would it be translated that one time as being the, what was that, proverb? Why would it be translated proverb? What is a proverb? If you were to give me a definition of what a proverb is, don't tell me there's 31 chapters of them in the Old Testament. What's a proverb? A lesson, a saying. Somebody said something else? A wise saying, a truth. Is that what a parable is? Essentially, parables are New Testament proverbs, if you want to look at them in that way. And so here's different translations, but here's what the word means. You go back and look at this word, and it's a compound word that has this idea that I have taken something. And the Greek prefix, para, just means something that's alongside. We have the English word parallel. What does that mean? Well, you've got perpendicular lines, and then you've got parallel lines that run side by side. And that's where the Greek prefix para, P-A-R-A, just means alongside. So anytime you see a Greek word that has that prefix, it just means alongside. And the idea of bole is just something's been thrown down. And so you've taken something and you've thrown it down alongside of another. That's what a parable is. A parable is taking something, throwing it down alongside another. And as Jesus used it, he took stories. And he took these stories that, are they simple? For the most part, are parables pretty simple? They're pretty simple stories. He took that which was simple and he laid it alongside a truth that he wanted us to learn. And having laid it alongside, if we can understand the simple story, what else can we understand? We can understand that truth. It's amazing how easy Jesus made it for us. How many times have you talked to people and somebody said, well, the Bible's just so hard to understand? Are there parts of the Bible that are hard to understand? What have you been reading lately, Bonnie? Are there parts of the Bible that are hard to understand? Sure there are. We wouldn't be honest, I don't guess, but does that mean that they can't be understood just because they're hard to understand? Is geometry hard to understand? Is trigonometry hard to, is calculus? Dan, don't answer for everybody else, okay? Talking about the average person in here. Dan's super genius and all of that, and so he does that in his sleep. But is that hard to understand? But can it be understood? Sure it can. Now, but that's just a small portion of the Bible. You take the teachings of Jesus. I'll ask the question again. Are parables simple? Yeah, they're simple. And for all of those who are going to say, well, the Bible's just is too hard to understand, I don't know that those people have actually tried to read the Bible. It's funny how many people make comments about the Bible. It's hard to understand. It has contradictions. It's this, it's that, it's the other. Have they even read the Bible? It's amazing how many of them haven't. Trudy? Boy, Trudy's like got, she's got ESP or something, doesn't she? She knew what that next line was going to say. It's an earthly story with a heavenly meaning. Anybody ever heard that before? I've heard that since I didn't even, before I knew I was hearing it, that that's what it was. Emily, you had your hand up a minute ago. Right. It's absolutely the case, and we'll see it in just a minute. Mark 4, Matthew 13, and other places where the disciples did come to Jesus and say, can you explain this to us? Now, was the explanation, once they had the explanation, could they go back and look at the story and say, yeah, I got it now? Sometimes things are, we'll look at that in a minute. The thing about parables is you can't overanalyze them. That's what some people have done with them. Is they've overanalyzed, tried to get in and tried to understand every little intricate detail of the parable. If you try to do that, you've totally misconstrued the purpose and the meaning of the parable to begin with. Jesus didn't intend for them to be complicated. Didn't intend for them to have every little detail analyzed and to come up with some meaning for every little detail. And we'll see as we go through this that there was a big picture. There was a moral truth, a moral principle that Jesus was trying to teach, and that's what we've got to come away with. As Trudy said, here's the definition of a parable that you. Forget the fact that it's something you throw alongside another. I think that helps us to see the comparison between the parable and the truth Jesus wants us to know. But how do we determine that? It's an earthly story with a heavenly meaning. Were these earthly stories? When Jesus told these stories, everything about them was about the earth and things that they knew on the earth. But with those stories, Jesus had a greater meaning than just the man went and threw some seed out on the ground. Had a greater meaning than, those five foolish virgins, they didn't make it to the feast. There was a greater meaning for all of those, and, and we'll see that as we go through here. A couple other things about the nature of the parable. I don't call parables similes or metaphors. What's a simile? Something is like or as something other. That's basically what we know about a simile. And sometimes the parables do start by saying the kingdom of heaven is like. But I don't think that's a simile. Here, simile is an explicit comparison between two things that really are not the same at all. Metaphor is an implied comparison between two things that are essentially unlike. And I don't think a parable is either one of those. For sure, a parable is not a fable, as some would like us to believe. In fact, there's a lot of people that would have you to believe all the stories in your Bible are fables, that they're just made up, that somebody along the way just had a really good imagination. And with that imagination, he made up the story about a boy killing a giant. Sounds like a fable, doesn't it? And he made up the story about a man praying to God and fire coming down and burning up the altar and licking up the water that was in the trench. He just made up that story. And made up the fanciful story about a man dipping in water seven times and leprosy being removed. Are there fables in the Bible? Yes. There are some fables. I think I've got one up here in Judges chapter 9 where it is very obvious that it's a fable being told. But what about the parables of Jesus? Are they fables? Here's a fable, something, a story that's composed of unreal events or impossible situations that really could not have occurred. When you look at that fable in Judges chapter 9, where you have trees who are looking for their leader. And so the trees are talking and they're bowing down and they're asking other trees and bushes and vines to be their leader. Is that real? I mean, get our minds out of our cartoon age and out of the, what is that thing, VeggieTale deal, you know, where you got all these crazy little vegetables that are talking. Get our minds out of that. Is it real for a tree to talk? I mean, we see it in movies today, obviously. We got all these animation that we can do all sorts of things. That's not real. Come to the stories that Jesus tells, these parables. You see any trees that are talking? You see any vegetables that are talking? No. There's nothing even faintly remote like a fable when you read the parables of Jesus. And then the other thing that it's not is it's not an allegory. When you look at an allegory, most allegories, every little detail in the story must have some kind of meaning. There was one person who looked at the story of, I think it was the parable of the Samaritan, a man by the name of Bishop Heber. He looked at the parable of Samaritan. Here's what he said. He said that in this parable, here's who everybody is. The traveler, he represents the human race. His leaving Jerusalem is made to symbolize man's departure from God. Jerusalem is the symbol for temptations. The robbers are the devil and his angels. The priest signifies the sacrifices of the Old Testament. The Levite represents the law of Moses. And the Samaritan typifies the Savior. Now, where did he get all of that? Have you read Luke chapter 10? Have you read the parable of the Samaritan, of the Good Samaritan? Did you get any of that? Did Jesus convey any of that? No. But it's what somebody likes to do, is to approach stories and say, represents this and this represents this. Where do they get that? Out of their own imagination. Yeah, you know, this guy could go work for Hollywood maybe. But that's not the way parables were intended to be. They were not spoken that way, and they for sure were not intended to be understood that way. What's the overall major point of the parable of the Good Samaritan? Does it have anything to do with leaving Jerusalem? And, you know, does it have anything to do with, you know, these guys being angels or demons? Or what's the whole point of that parable? Loving one another. What's the question that Jesus asked? Somebody said it, I think. Who's my neighbor? And it's figuring out who's my neighbor. And then when I figure that out, what am I supposed to do? Go and serve my neighbor. That's all that's about. If you get into trying, as this man did, try to assign some kind of detailed meaning to every little detail, guess what? You lose sight of the whole meaning of the parable. And all of a sudden you're making it mean something that Jesus never intended for that thing to mean. Parables are simply illustrations. That's what they are. It's something that is real in life, something that really could have happened. Could a sower really have gone out and thrown seed on four different soils? Yeah, that really could happen. Could the parable of the Good Samaritan, could that have really happened? It may have really happened. Every single parable is not just, it's not just some fanciful idea. It's something that was real. It's something that they understood. And so when Jesus is telling the parables, they're thinking and they're following along. And they're not having to come up with some fabled idea of how this could happen. They're thinking, you know, something like that happened to Isaiah a couple days ago. I know what he's talking about. These things were very real to them. And here's the point where it just says that nearly a third or about a third of his teachings were in parables. And so something we need to look at. Let's look at the purpose of Jesus' parables. Let me put up these points and talk about it. Look in Matthew chapter 13. We'll spend a few minutes over in Matthew 13. As you're reading through the New Testament, this is the first, may or may not be the first parable that you read, depending on how you define what a parable is and which stories are parables. Meaning, Matthew chapter 7, verses 24 through 27. The story about the wise builder and the foolish builder. Is that a parable or not? Some people put it in a parable category. Some don't. Is it called in Scripture? Is it called a parable? No, not really. It's just an illustration that Jesus uses at the end of that sermon. I would put it in the category of a parable. It's a story that's being told that has a... It's an earthly story with a heavenly meaning. But anyway, Matthew chapter 13. On the same day, Jesus went out of the house and sat by the sea, and great multitudes were gathered together to him. So that he got into a boat and sat, and the whole multitude stood on the shore. And he spoke many things to them in parables. How many parables do you have in Matthew chapter 13? Well, chapter 13 and verse 3, parable of the sower. Go down to chapter 13 and verse 24. Another parable he put forth to them, saying, the kingdom of heaven is like a man who sowed good seed in his field. Go to verse 31. Another parable he spoke forth to them, saying, the kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed. Go to verse 33. Another parable he spoke to them, the kingdom of heaven is like leaven, which a woman took and hid in three measures of meal. Go down to verse 37. He answered and said to them, he who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world. The good seeds are the sons of the kingdom, but the tares are the sons of God. And goes into this explanation of the parable of the tares. Look at verse 44. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field. Verse 45. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant seeking beautiful pearls. Verse 47. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a dragnet that was cast into the sea. So when you read, what is it, verse 2? No, verse 3. He spoke many things to them in parables. Jesus begins at this point and just starts telling parable after parable after parable. And there's really a transition in the ministry of Jesus at this time. This is where the opposition, where the Pharisees and the scribes are really starting to mount up against him. And it's interesting that at this point where the opposition is rising against him, that it seems to be at this same point, he begins speaking in parables. Is that just a coincidence, you think? Just a coincidence that these people are opposing him at every turn? And so how does he start teaching? He starts teaching 30-some different parables. Come to chapter 13 again, verse 10. He tells the parable of the sower. The disciples came to him and said, why do you speak to them in parables? We haven't heard this before. It's interesting the pronoun that they used. Why do you speak to us in parables? Your Bible say that? Why do you speak to them in parables? Did the apostles need to learn the lesson of the sower? Sure they did. Who did they see the application being made to? Who did they see it being spoken to? These other people. Why are you speaking to them in parables? Verse 11. Because it has been given to them. Is that the pronoun you've got? Why are you speaking to them in parables? The first answer he gives. Because it has been given to you. He turns the answer first to the apostles, say, because it has been given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. What's the difference there? Why does Jesus say, okay, here's the reason. First reason is, because to you it's been given to know the mystery of the kingdom, but not to they, it's not been given to them. Why not? Why would Jesus give these great truths, these great hidden things about the kingdom of God that the world had been waiting for, why would he give them to one people and not give them to somebody else? Why wouldn't Jesus come and give them to everybody? Okay, for sure he wants the apostles to get this message. Look in verse 12. Did I put one? No, I didn't put verse 12 up there because it's on the next slide. We're going to skip ahead anyway and look in verse 12. For whoever has what? Notice there's a comma. Whoever has what? Whoever has knowledge? To you has been given to what? To know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. What was not given to them? To know. For whoever has what? This knowledge. To him more will be given, and he will have abundance. See, we often quote verse 12 in the context of money, financial means. We sometimes use the passage out of context. For whoever has, to him more will be given, and he will have abundance. But whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken away from him. Well, that's even more confusing. So they had knowledge, and now Jesus says they had some, but even what they had is going to be taken away from them. Why would Jesus? I'm asking trick questions, so I guess I ought to be honest with that. Why would Jesus take away their knowledge? That doesn't seem fair. Like the parable of the talents? Explain that. Okay. Okay. If Jesus just spent what? Verses 3 through 9. So what is that? That's 7 verses. Jesus spent, well, 6.5 because verse 3 is not a total verse on the parable. Jesus just spent 6.5 verses telling a parable. Who heard it? That's maybe a trick question. Not really. Who heard the parable? Yeah, go back up. Verse 2. Great multitudes were gathered together to him. Who's in the great multitudes? Everybody who's in the great multitudes. So when you get down, he spent 6.5 verses. Who heard the parable? Everybody heard it. What's the difference? When Jesus spoke in parables, one of the primary reasons he spoke in parables was to reveal spiritual truth clearly to who? To people who were looking for it. If you wanted to find truth, if you wanted to know truth when Jesus spoke in parables, guess what you would be finding? Truth. You'd find it. And so there were those who were seeking the truth, and that's why Jesus addresses first the apostles in verse 11 when he says, before I talk about them, let me tell you something. It's been given to you to know the mysteries. Why? Because they wanted to know the mysteries. So here's an opportunity for those who are seeking the will of God. When they hear these parables, the parables are going to reveal truths to them. Those who are disposed to know and accept the truth, the parables serve to arouse their attention, to excite inquiry. If they did not at first apprehend the meaning, which we've mentioned, they could come and ask him. So they would go to Jesus and ask him, as they did over in verse 36, explain to us the parable of the tares in the field. But what happened when Jesus spoke in parables is that he began to separate he began to separate those who did want to seek the will of God and those who didn't. And that's why he says in verse 11, to them it was not given. Did they not hear it? He spoke the parable, and who heard it? Everybody heard it. So didn't he give it to them? Well, he gave it to them, if you want to use that word, but they didn't want it. The same is true today. Absolutely. Start in verse 12 again. For whoever has, to him more will be given, and he will have abundance. But whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken away from him. Therefore, I speak to them in parables. He's answering their question now. Therefore, I speak to them in parables, because seeing, they do not see, and hearing, they do not hear, nor do they understand. And in them the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled, which says, hearing you will hear and shall not understand, and seeing you will see and not perceive. For the hearts of this people have grown dull. Their ears are hard of hearing, and their eyes they have closed, lest they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears, lest they should understand with their hearts and turn, so that I should heal them. When Jesus spoke in parables, there's two different groups of people that are there listening to these parables. There are those people that want to hear the parables and want to hear the truths and are yearning for knowledge. And there are those who are there, like the Pharisees and the scribes, who are trying to oppose him. I don't think it's coincidental that at the time that this opposition is rising, he starts speaking in parables. So that those who wanted the truth, they could grab it, they could know it. But here's a Pharisee, a scribe, or your average person who's opposing Jesus. They hear these parables, and what are they thinking? Why is this guy telling a story about seeds? That's kind of dumb. Why is he telling a story about soils? This guy's a carpenter. He's not a farmer. What does he know about farming? He doesn't know a thing. Why is he talking about mustard seeds? Where has this guy got any idea about mustard seeds? And all they can see is the person talking and the words coming out, but they're not putting it together. They don't have a desire to know the truth. They don't have a desire to come and have any interest in it. So what they're doing is attempting to twist what Jesus is saying. It was not that Jesus did not want them to know the truth. It was the fact that they had closed their hearts to it. Who else do you know in the Bible that had closed their heart to God? Anybody else? Pharaoh is one that we think of. The Bible describes him as hardening his heart. But at the same time, the Bible describes God as hardening Pharaoh's heart. So who's to blame? Pharaoh or God? Yeah. Careful how you answer that question. Pharaoh's to blame. So why would it say that God hardened his heart? For the same reason that it could be said that Jesus was blinding their eyes. For the same reason that Jesus would say, to them it has not been given, when he just gave it to them. For the same reason that Jesus would say that they could see, but they really couldn't see, and they were listening, but they really couldn't understand. Why? Not because of anything that Jesus said or didn't say. It was because they didn't want to listen. Dirk? It is. Look over in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. There is a sharp contrast that is made in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 between those who love the truth and those who do not love the truth, which is exactly the contrast that's being made in these parables and in Jesus's explanation of why he's using parables. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. We don't have time to explain in detail all that's happening and all that's being described here. Start in verse 9. 2 Thessalonians 2 and verse 9. The coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan, with all power, signs, and lying wonders, and with all unrighteous deception among those who perish. Remember that phrase. Among those who perish, That's in the present tense, really means those who are perishing. Who's perishing? Those people who did not receive the love of the truth that they might be saved. Why were people perishing? Did they receive the truth? But what was lacking? The love of the truth. The desire to obey the truth. And it's interesting, the Bible says here, if you've got a love for the truth, what will that do for you? It'll save you. But they didn't have that love for the truth, and so they were not saved. Verse 11, and for this reason, God will send them, who's them? People who don't love the truth. God will send them strong delusion that they should believe the lie. If you don't have a love for the truth, by implication, what do you have a love for? The lie. So somebody says, well, why would God send them a strong delusion so that they would believe the lie? Guess what they already believed? The lie. They made up their minds to believe that. Was God going to force them not to believe it? Was Jesus going to come along and speak in his parables and take those Pharisees and scribes aside, shake them up and say, look, you got to listen to what I'm saying. You're the religious leaders of this day. If you don't believe me, nobody's going to believe me. You got to understand this. Is that what he did? If you don't want to love the truth, is God going to make you? No. Did Pharaoh want to listen to God? Let my people go. Who is this God that I should listen to him? What an arrogant man. He didn't want to listen to God. Was God going to force him? God got pretty close, didn't he? I mean, if you turn somebody's water to blood, are you trying to get them to listen to you? You're trying to do something to the man. If you had frogs in your bed and in your cupboard, and you said, oh, well, we can survive with them another night. I think somebody's trying to get your attention. And it's not your wife who's telling you, let these people go so that we can get rid of these frogs. Pharaoh is the one who turned against God. Those who did not receive the love of the truth that Paul's talking about in 2 Thessalonians are the ones who turned against God. And here were these scribes and these Pharisees who had made up their own minds that whatever Jesus said, they weren't going to listen to it. They weren't going to hear. Look at verse 16. Back to Matthew 13. Back to Matthew 13 and verse 16. Jesus turns back to the apostles with a word of contrast in what he's saying in verse 16. But blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. Is the difference in the eyes? In the ears? Or is the difference in the heart? Well, you got to be kidding me. We're not even halfway through this. For assuredly I say to you, verse 17, that many prophets and righteous men desired to see what you see and did not see it, and to hear what you hear and did not hear it. These apostles and all of these people were hearing truths that the world had been waiting for thousands of years. If the world had been waiting for them for that long, wouldn't you want to hear them? Wouldn't you want to listen to them? Wouldn't you want to grab a hold of them as much as you could? There were some people who did, and there were some people who didn't. And that's really the nature of parables. Jesus tells a story, and you can grab the meaning or you can refuse and ignore the meaning. And that was his purpose in speaking parables. His purpose in speaking parables was to separate people into those who wanted to know the truth and those who didn't want to know the truth. And it's interesting, we won't take time to look at it, but several times, even though they didn't understand the parables, even the Pharisees got the idea that, is he talking about us? Maybe they didn't comprehend everything, but all of a sudden they're starting to put things together and like, maybe he said, have you ever been around somebody speaking another language and you're wondering, are they talking about me? You walk into a room with people who can speak perfectly good English, but they start speaking another language in front of you, and what do you think? They're saying something about me. Here's these scribes and Pharisees. Did they speak the language? Yeah, but their ears weren't working. But they were getting a clue, you know what? He might be talking about us here. Jesus is dividing them out, not by anything that he's doing necessarily, but just by the representation of their hearts. Let me get through these, at least the purpose. I've got, I think, three more purposes here, but it's real quick. Another purpose that I see in the parables is that Jesus was trying to get people to agree to the truth, maybe before they really understood it completely. Now, you say that's kind of tricky. In some cases, these people would convict themselves before they knew the main point of his teaching. For instance, and there's one in the Old Testament, one in the New Testament. Remember the story where Nathan came to David and told him a parable? David's reaction to the parable was, that guy's got to die. And what did Nathan say to him? David, you are the man. Did David convict himself before he understood the whole story there? Yeah. That's what happened with these parables. Look in Matthew 21 real quick. In Matthew chapter 21 is one of those occasions. Jesus is telling this parable of the wicked vine dressers. And it's one of those times in verse 41. The response is, and we don't have time to look at the whole parable, but verse 41, they respond and they say, Jesus had asked them the question, when the owner of the vineyard comes, in verse 40, what will he do to those vine dressers? And they say, he will destroy those wicked men miserably and lease his vineyard to other vine dressers who will render to him the fruits of their seasons. What did they not realize? Finally, they realize it down to verse 45. Chief priests and Pharisees heard this parable. Then they perceived that he was speaking about them. At first, they were like, he's just going to destroy them. And then they figured out, we're the them. We're the ones that are going to get destroyed. So Jesus tells parables to get, something they understand. They're kind of nodding their heads. Yep, that's true. Yep, that's me. Accept the truth as a truth and then turn around and make application of it. Two more very quickly. Jesus told parables in order to fulfill prophecy. There's a prophecy in Psalm 78 that Matthew records and says, all of these things Jesus spoke to the multitude in parables, and without a parable, he did not speak to them. That, here's the purpose, in order that it might be fulfilled, which is spoken by the prophet. What if Jesus had not spoken in parables? What was the prophecy? I will open my mouth in a parable. Suppose Jesus came and did not teach in parables. Well, he's a nice guy, but guess what? He's not the Messiah. Prophecy said that he would teach in parables. And obviously, there's a lot of advantages to teaching in parables because he was talking about things that they understood. He was telling stories about matters that they were very familiar with. He's bringing that heavenly message, that heavenly meaning, that heavenly truth, down to their level. And that's what we've got to do. One last point. And that is, he was telling these stories so that they could remember them. What do you know about the kingdom of heaven? I would guess that a lot that you know about the kingdom of heaven is based upon a parable. Are there people you know that are not really religious, but they know something about the Good Samaritan? Where'd that story come from? The Bible. They may not know all the details, and they may not even know it's in the Bible, perhaps. But do people know the Good Samaritan? Do people perhaps know the prodigal son, or at least the concept of that story? Jesus spoke in parables in simple terms that they would understand, but also stories that would stick with people so that they would remember them and so that then when they would understand the nature of the kingdom that he was talking about. We'll talk about the kingdom of heaven next time.